When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Il va toujours descendre. Il va toujours descendre. Il va toujours descendre.
Il
voulait plus de sang.
Blood?
Il voulait plus de sang.
I think she's saying blood.
Not the word I want to be hearing ici. Right now.
Listen, cool, ici.
Shit, more blood stuff. I don't know.
Ici. Ici.
Here? Here. She's saying here.
There's blood where, Lottie?
You really have to be encouraging her, Van.
Blood here or out there?
Ici. Il faut.
You must spill blood. Or else.
Or else what, Lottie?
Everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Wendy.
And I'm Penny.
And I'm Jason.
And this is Yellow Jackets WTF, episode 11.
This episode, we're covering Yellow Jackets, season 1, episode 5, Blood Hive. And spoiler alert, this is a very spoiler-full podcast.
Yeah, if you haven't seen all of Yellow Jackets, then you should go watch it, because it's awesome. But we're going to be talking about future episodes. And yeah, what a name, Blood Hive. Sounds very Yellow Jacket-y.
Yeah.
Kind of dark, but I don't know, tongue-in-cheek at the same time.
Creepy.
Yeah,
when Travis said it, I was like, do they have someone say the name of the episode in every episode? Like, now I want to go back and check.
I don't know, but Steve Brown sent in a voicemail this time, so at some point during his voicemail he's gonna say, hey, they said the name of the episode, mic drop.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah,
me too.
All right, so let's get started with our fucked up moment of the week. Jason, you want to go first?
So the whole scene in the seance with Lottie flipping out and saying they must spill blood was pretty fucked up. It wants more blood and speaking French all of a sudden. But the part I wanted to focus on is when Laura Lee yells, "The power of Christ compels you," at Lottie, and then, which is right out of The Exorcist, and then smacks her on the head with the Bible, I guess.
Yep.
I mean, maybe I'm the only one, but I laugh at stuff like that. It's
horrible. Laugh out loud.
They're all screaming and it's horrible and they're afraid, but I was just like,
yeah,
it was hilarious. She literally threw the book at her. Like,
yep.
And it worked.
Yeah. And then she's like, what the hell? It totally worked.
The show is funny.
I think it's this episode was really funny.
How about you, Penny?
I went back and forth. A lot of Callie's behavior was pretty fucked up, but Misty poisoning Ben. I keep coming back to things that Misty does, not because she's necessarily always the craziest one, but like, she intentionally is doing these things. It's different for me than someone who has visions or sleepwalks or panics.
Reactive, yeah.
Yeah, she's intentionally, like, premeditatively doing horrible things.
Yep.
Yep. Can't argue with that.
My fucked up moment of the week was Callie wearing what she thought was her mother's Yellow Jackets uniform as a Halloween costume, knowing everything that represented. I think also being a teenage daughter survivor myself, I could totally relate to that. And I thought that was pretty fucked up.
It was so disrespectful and cruel.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think, you know, she's a very seemingly, from what I know, a typical teen who's just like at this stage where it's like, Mom, come on, you're boring. You don't know anything. But this whole Yellow Jackets thing is cool to a lot of people because it's mysterious, mm-hmm. you know? And so maybe that's her way of being edgy and cool.
Right. I think
not that it's not fucked up. I mean,
right. I think she was riding a little bit on the coattails of being the daughter of a survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. But it would be like if, and forgive me for even going here, but if like you got your grandfather's, you know, fatigues from when he was in a internment camp in the Holocaust or something like that and wore it out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty fucked up.
Callie is a horrible horrible child.
I mean, she's
an asshole, as Shauna would say.
I don't think she's horrible. I think she's, just like Jason said, I think she's typical. I mean, she's entitled. Yeah. She's spoiled. She hasn't had to face much adversity. At least it seems like it. You know, as soon as she realized it was Jackie's uniform, she did look really upset that she had done it.
So. Yeah. Well, here's the thing about that is, you know, Shauna asks her what she's on and she just says, Molly, like, I don't care what you think. I'm just going to say it because I don't care. But and then a little bit later, I think because she still has the uniform on, they have this interaction and she realizes she just caught her mom out on a date with another guy that's not her father. And she's like, when did you fall out of love with Dad? And then they talk about how they have, it's not that simple. We have baggage. And she's like Jackie. And then that's when she tells her that was Jackie's uniform. And she goes, oh God, I'm sorry, Mom. And it's just so awful. You had to go through all that. And Sean's like, no, bad things happen. I'm fine. And, no, Mom, you're not. You're so not fine. Do you think I can't see that? All of that is filtered through her being on ecstasy, which makes you very emotionally open and more likely to say things that have been unsaid and caring about people that you may have had walls up with, attuned to their emotional state and even able to address your own emotions that you may have been afraid to look at before. I mean, that's what I hear. I don't know. But so I love that they didn't like hit that so hard. Like she wasn't acting all loopy or anything, but really, I feel like this was her on ecstasy. Like the next day, Shauna's still like, oh, it was so nice to connect almost. And like, are you okay? And she's like, how do you think, Mom? Just back to her old self, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Shauna totally takes it in stride.
Yeah.
It's one of my most favorite moments in the entire series.
Yes, I agree.
That whole conversation between them.
Yeah. 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 Where Shauna just calls her bluff and calls it immediately.
Oh, that.
Oh, honey,
oh, that.
Come in here.
Yeah.
Oh, she so does. Yeah.
She handled it.
Yep.
And I mean, I wonder if she thought there was a chance Callie would just go ahead and tell. And I don't think so. I think she was pretty sure she wouldn't. But maybe she thought, well, what if she tells? Then I kind of deserve it anyway. So what the hell?
Yeah, I think she you know your kid.
Yeah.
You know your kid pretty well, so I think you know what they're going to do. I do.
That's
I remember
what it seemed like to me.
Yeah, I remember I had challenges with Cassie, my oldest, and she turned 18 her senior year in January. You know, but she was still in high school and it was this very much this, I'm 18, you can't tell me what to do. And many times I would be like, okay, go out and get your own apartment and get a job then. And
yeah.
And let me definitely know how that works out for you.
I think the part that really hit Callie was when Shauna says, and you'll be able to give him advice because most of those girls will be your age.
Yes.
The look on Callie's face of just horror. I felt like she was flipping through all her friends being like, oh God. Yeah. Have any of them ever commented that my dad is cute? Like, oh my God.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what just, she didn't say was, and I may be dating your boyfriend now.
And she was seeing Shauna in a different light, I think.
Yeah.
Like she's definitely calling my bluff.
Yeah. She looks surprised. Like, mm-hmm. Shauna doesn't go there very often.
All right.
But I wasn't surprised.
What's your first point, Jason?
The seance. So, and Lottie, and how she, like, I think she's clearly run out of pills, and she's starting to revert to her natural state, which schizophrenic, clairvoyant, we don't really know. But, like, when someone hears that noise scratching upstairs, and what the hell's that? And she's like, you heard that too? Like,
yeah,
I've been hearing things, but nobody else usually does, you know? And then she's out in the lake, just staring into the water, seemingly confused and dazed. Well, dazed and confused is usually how that's said, but anyway. and so then, you know, Jackie's trying to help everyone feel better with the fun seance after Shauna gave her that pep talk that she helps people feel better. I think that's what inspired her to do that. And so she's having Shauna place the candles on the symbols of this. Were they all the same? This triangle person with the hook leg?
They showed only two, and those two were the same, but the other ones, I don't think they showed them clearly.
They didn't show, but that's the one we keep seeing. And man, such a horror movie thing for someone to just be like, yeah, there's already symbols down there. Put them down there. It'll be fine.
What could go wrong?
It's so seancey.
Yeah, it is. And later when, you know, just to briefly touch on something else, when Misty traces that same symbol into the, where Wax was, where Travis died. And Nat says Travis didn't believe in any of this. It just adds to the idea that these symbols end up being connected to whatever belief system they develop out there, probably speared on by Lottie, you know.
And interesting that some of them still didn't believe even after mm-hmm. the whole thing was over.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, because during this seance, they're asking questions, and if it goes into a circle, the little string with the thing on the end of it, then it's yes. And if it goes back and forth, it's no. And when they ask, when Javi asks, will we all die out here? And it makes an eight. I wonder if that means eight of them will survive. And I think in the Cannibal Council, there were seven, right? And I think we've tried to figure out who could still be left alive, given that the Antler Queen has so many strands of hair, and how many people were there when we saw them and everything, and the strands of hair may signify dead people, that maybe there's one or two left. So I wonder, I've always wondered, well, it would have to be because we know Travis survived. So I don't think he's on the Cannibal Council. So he's running around out there somewhere else going, get me out of here. But, couple things about the seance. It was interesting who did not participate. Laura Lee, of course, she's like, I'm not messing with the occult, you guys suck. Thaisa was really interesting because she's the one who keeps saying, I don't believe in any of this stuff, but then why not just do it for fun? And I think it's because she's afraid that it might be true, or, you know, she's had that experience when she was a little girl with the man with no eyes. And the coach who, well, I guess he's dealing with being poisoned.
But well, also, and he probably also would have had trouble getting upstairs.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, it's a ladder.
That's pretty simple. Yeah. But he also may just be like, let the kids have their fun, even if it wasn't for those other things.
Right.
What do we learn? We learn, I mean, quote unquote, learn that Principal Berzonski is screwing Mrs. DeWine, or Ms. DeWine, that if they hadn't crashed, they wouldn't have won nationals. Boo. And that someone got fake boobs, and that the person Misty likes her back. So that's not true.
No.
So what does that mean? What do you guys
None
think
of
that
it's
means?
True. I mean, None it was pretty true. Clear that Shauna was manipulating the string until the infinity symbol. Then they didn't really show her hands or her face. So it was hard to tell after that, but earlier, you know, she like looked under her blindfold, and she was smirking. Okay. And
so we're supposed to more question, like, whether once the window came open and Lottie got possessed, that was like when the spirit entered, maybe, right? If anything did happen at all. Because I wasn't thinking about that way, but I think you're totally right. Because I've tried that before, where you dangle the string and ask a question. And if you just sit there long enough, it'll start doing something, even though you're trying to keep it still, just from your subconscious mind, you know?
Yeah. And you can't hold your arm still forever.
Yeah. But it'll go in a circle, or, you know, it'll draw. I believe it draws from your subconscious, you know?
Yeah.
So then anyway, so I think the way that, because the perspective shifted to outside coming up towards the cabin in the dark, and I feel like that was probably an intentional nod to Evil Dead, where they show from the demon's perspective, the camera goes across the forest floor and up to the cabin, and then through the window a lot of times, and Lottie's like possessed and saying things like, it wants hungry. She looked at Shauna and said, it's in you already, which is interesting given she's pregnant. And then a lot of things in French. Il veut toujours du sang. He always wants blood. Il voulait du sang. It wanted blood. It wants more blood. It's all about blood. And then you must spill blood or else. So I think in the end, they end up believing that if they don't spill someone's blood, then bad things will happen. So that's, you know, so they end up sacrificing people like Pit Girl.
Yeah. And Lottie, you know, she hits her head on that window. And I think they probably come to believe that that was the blood that they needed in that moment.
In that moment. Mm. And they also mention she sucks at French, which I'm glad they said that, because then I get to still keep my thing that, well, that means she took French. Maybe she sucked at it when she was conscious, but it was all in her subconscious, you know, still like thinking that it could be that there's nothing actual supernatural happening.
Did you think of Lost?
That you mention it, no. What this reminds me of, who was it? Was it Locke went to the old cabin and there was a circle of powder around it? And Jacob was inside. Remember that? That was a...
I thought more of the recording of the French woman that they heard in season one.
Mm.
Yeah.
There was like a man in the rocking chair in there and a whole bunch of weird shit happened.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, but I don't remember the powder. Anyway.
Anyway.
I wrote down exactly what they said during the whole seance scene.
Okay.
After Lottie, like, senses the wind or senses the spirit or whatever's going on there, and she screams, then all the girls are like swirling around her, and she says, it wants, and then Van says, Misty, what do we do? Which I thought was hilarious. Lottie says, it wants, and Mari says, Lottie, I swear to God, if you're fucking with us. Akilah, I think she's like possessed. Shauna, listen, Lottie sweetie, what's going on? What is it? Akilah, more like, what does it want? And then Lottie says, hungry. And then she whispers it, hungry. And then laughs. And then she turns to Shauna and says, shh, it's in you already. And Ty, who's standing over her, says, Lottie, knock it off. This isn't a game. That's when Lottie starts speaking in French in like a really deep voice.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackie tries to translate, which was pretty funny. She's like, I suck at French too. She's like, it wants something, blood. I think she's saying blood, shit, more blood stuff. I don't know. And then there's like all the shouting and stuff. And Lottie says, you must spill blood or else. And then somebody says, or else what, Lottie? And then that's when she slams her head into the window and bleeds. Coach is barfing at that exact moment. And then that's when Laura Lee comes up with the whole Bible thumping routine.
Literal Bible thumping. So to me, I mean, it seems pretty simple. Like, she thinks there's some presence that is hungry for blood, or else something bad's gonna happen, you know?
Yeah. And Ty points out earlier, like, Lottie's been acting weird for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how long they've been out there, but weeks.
This seems like 4 to 6 weeks.
Maybe,
Mark,
yeah.
Probably.
For Shauna's early pregnancy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at one point, Nat says, when they're talking about the scratchy noise, Nat says, maybe it's the dead guy's missing fingers.
Yes, I had a question about that.
I was like, he had missing fingers?
Have we seen that? Did we know that? I didn't think we did.
I didn't notice, but it could have been there.
I caught a couple things this rewatch. I also hadn't caught the first time around that Lottie says, you hear that too? With the noises? Which means she's probably been really suffering under thinking that she's crazy. She's been hearing and seeing things.
Yeah, that no one else hears and sees.
Mm-hmm.
Did we see them take the body out?
I don't think so.
But no. It's not there, right?
At one point, they say, we bury
it. Yeah, they reference that they buried it.
And they call him
the
hunter.
Huh.
It's weird we didn't see that.
Yeah. I also, Javi wasn't participating. He was downstairs at first, but then came up and Travis said, I thought I told you to stay down there. So Travis didn't want him to be a part of that.
Yeah. I think Javi said, I want to see what they're all laughing about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he goes up and says, are we going to die out here?
Right. Which is what they're like, all thinking, but nobody says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to.
Travis
ask that
is
either.
Like, shut up.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. Buzz kill.
Right. Buzz kill.
Yep.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Penny, your point?
I wanted to talk about the words, those words spill on Thais's door. First of all, the red paint, and it was all drippy and stuff, was nice. That was a nice touch that it kind of looked like blood. And so when it happened, she's inside with Simone, who doesn't deserve any of this. And Biscuit is barking at something. Thaisa looks outside and sees a wolf. This time it's a gray wolf, not a white wolf. And this is the part that kills me. She grabs a knife and says to Simone, stay here, and runs outside. If I'm Simone, that part would have already freaked me out. Like, she, like, what's going on? Why are you taking a kitchen knife outside? Like, all right.
I thought it was a letter opener, but maybe it was a knife.
Oh, maybe, but
it was a sharp object.
Yeah. And so then the question is, did Thaisa paint spill on the door when she was being her alternate personality, the lady in the tree? Or did somebody else, like the cult, write spill on the door because they're trying to push Thaisa into turning into her alter personality? Did Thaisa, lady in the tree, hide the paint in Sammy's room? Or did Sammy hide the paint to try to protect her? I couldn't decide any of those questions.
We don't know.
I don't think Thaisa did it. I think it's probably somebody else, but I think it's questionable. I don't think Sammy did it.
No, I don't think Sammy did it. I think Thaisa did it, but the only reason why I think that is because the paint's under the bed in the house.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah. And then later they cut directly from the exorcism to Ty's press conference in front of her house. And I thought it was just really appropriate that they've covered up the word spill with ghosts. It was like symbolic of like how she's haunted by what happened to her. And then in her speech, first she looks at Simone and smiles, like, and Simone's thinking, yes, honey, you can do this. And then she's like, I'm staying in the race. And she says, I knew when I started this campaign that I was getting into a bloody business. And she says it all like bloody. And she does this whole, like, together we can do anything. I've seen it happen, like, inspiration from the wilderness bit.
She's trying to own it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but not, right? Yeah. She's trying to have
own
it
without
ways.
Having to spell it out what happened. But own some great version of it.
Yeah, you know? Just like the leadership-y parts.
Yeah.
But
the inspiring
parts. You know, and in the first episode when we saw her campaign ad, she said, you know, I want to lead New Jersey out of the wilderness. Yeah. Like she already was opening the door for people to ask her questions about that. She kind of brought this on herself.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. That's the same tactic to be like, hey, I survived this thing and now I can, you know, do amazing things. And I think,
she's using her notoriety.
She's using the notoriety, but I think she's also just trying to take control of the narrative. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing because everybody's already, they already know about it. So they're going to ask the questions no matter what. So I think she's just trying to take control of the narrative. That's my take.
So they find the paint under Sammy's bed before the press conference, right?
Yeah.
So that somehow I had that mixed up before this rewatch, and I thought they found the paint under Sammy's bed after the press conference. But the fact that she thought that her son did that, and then used that to blame her political partner or her political rival, that's really fucked up. Like, I guess I hadn't put the timeline of that together.
I remember thinking that right when you first saw it, like, wow, you really, she's so passionate about it too. Look what they did.
Right. Yeah,
she's a good actor.
Yeah.
I mean, they are kind of doing stuff like that in a way, but not exactly that.
Yeah. I really want to be on Team Thaisa, but she's really selfish.
That's her thing. But, you know, I was thinking about it, like, I think her flaw, because, you know, she had that scene where she's stayed the night with Shauna, adult Shauna, later on, and she talks about how basically she did everything that she had planned on doing, but maybe it was unsatisfying. Her whole thing is she just pushes through. She's ambitious, and her accomplishing her goals is what's most important to her. But sometimes that can adversely affect the people around her. And I was thinking about that, and I'm like, well, I don't want to be too judgmental about a woman who wants to run for office. That's awesome, you know. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with that as long as you can meet your child's needs. But she's around Sammy a lot, and she calls him Sandwich in this episode. That was cute. And I mean, from what we've seen in this episode, she's having talks with him all the time, reading stories to him and everything. So I don't know. I think she's maybe my favorite as far as her personality right now this week.
I think we associate politics with such slime and dirt, and I mean,
I don't feel that way about her though. Right now, she's trying to do good. I feel like not trying to like get power so she can accomplish something.
I mean, I've met people that truly are trying to do good, but I feel like once you get to a certain level, it somehow it gets lost in the game that you have to play, and yeah. I don't know. I think she should have backed out. If I was her spouse, I would have said it's costing too much, you know?
I don't know. I mean, we got to have politicians who try to do good. And it's okay to have ones that have kids. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but not if they have a mental disorder where they possibly murder and stuff in their sleep.
That's true. But we know that he's not actually doing that and it's her. But I guess she doesn't know that. So you have to kind of judge it based on what she knows. So yeah, good point.
Yeah.
For my point, I'll talk about Misty. Misty poisons Ben. And obviously she thinks that she's in love with Ben. She's got this huge crush on Ben. It seems to be her entire focus of why she does things. But yet she poisons him. And it's just, why? You know, why are you hurting the person that you love?
because she's Annie Wilkes.
I think she wants him to need her.
Yeah.
And to continue to need her.
If she had a big mallet like Annie Wilkes, she'd...
Also, maybe she wanted to test the mushrooms and see if they worked.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. She wanted to see what happened. But she could have killed him. She's given him stuff out of the woods that she has no idea what it does. She could have killed him. I just trying to crawl into Missy's head. And similarly to that, it's obvious that she really wants to be friends, grown-up Misty, really wants to be friends with the other team members, Natalie and Shauna. So Natalie's back in her life, and she wants to be friends with Natalie, but then she bugs Natalie's apartment. Like, it's like she can't stop herself from doing those things.
Yeah, she has to try to manipulate the situation in covert ways, because in her experience, like, well, I don't know exactly why, but maybe because in her experience, when she just tries to be straightforward, people don't like her, you know?
Yeah. But then that's even more reason why no one trusts her, mm-hmm. and no one wants to have her involved in anything.
I mean, we all do self-sabotaging behaviors that don't make sense. But yeah, it doesn't work. I mean, dude, she's like asking, does the person who I like me back? Like the night that coach said, Misty, get the fuck away from me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, catch a clue. The answer
and
is
I
no.
also think that was part of the reason why she poisoned him too, was for punishment for him spurning her that way.
Yeah. Punishment and, or just like, okay, he thinks he's well enough that he doesn't seem to need me anymore. So I'm going to make him sick. So he will. I did totally think that she tripped him last week, almost purely as punishment, because he, like you guys said, he picked Shauna to be the one to slit the deer's throat or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But this time I feel like it's maybe about that, but more about just wanting to hobble him more so that he'll need her.
And then finally he confronts her and she confesses that she has all these feelings for him. And then I think he makes probably what is probably going to be a fatal error.
Yeah.
In that he tells her that he also has feelings for her and loves her, but he can't act on them because she's a minor. And I think that's really going to come back to get him later.
I do.
Yeah. I tried to think about what would have been a better strategy for him. This was one of my points too. And I honestly think she would have taken him telling her he's gay so much better.
Yep.
At this
right
point.
Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
When he tells her later,
it's worse.
It's not the same. Yeah.
Because she says, you tricked me. And I wasn't sure why she said that, but now rewatching this is why, because what he's saying right now. Yeah, I don't blame her for being pissed about that. But I think I was trying to think, why would he do this? Well, she tripped him. She poisoned him. She's messing around with him while he's asleep. I think he's afraid of her. That's why he's doing it.
Yep.
And you even wonder, like, okay, I probably did need my leg to be chopped off, but maybe part of the reason why she did that is because she knew I would be dependent on her, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would be terrified of her if I were Ben.
Yeah.
I think that's why he did it. Yeah. It makes a little more sense now. It's still dumb, but
I also don't really understand why he hasn't like buddied up with anyone else there.
Right.
And been like, oh, well, you know, Laura Lee's going to help with this, or, you know, somebody who's not crazy.
Totally.
Yeah.
Who you could trust, or, you know, Travis could help him with like bathroom stuff and maybe that would be less awkward.
Well, he did say, you know, hey, Shauna, here, you can do the bloodletting.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, that's true.
And look what happened. Tripped.
Yeah.
That's really true. He's just screwed in general when Misty sets her sights on someone.
Yeah. I wonder what would have happened. I wish we could see like a what if he just said right then that he was gay. She'd be like, oh, you are not.
Yep. All right. Your next moment. Jason?
One more thing I wanted to say about that, and then I'll do my next one, okay, is that when he does admit he's gay, when he's on shrooms and she's upset and says he tricked her, last episode, Misty said to Nat, adult Misty, when talking about Travis's murder, she said, "I would never want to presume to say that I know exactly what you're going through, but I just want you to know it's not your fault." So I wondered if that meant that Misty, because what Nat is going through is that someone has been murdered that she cares about, and maybe she kind of thinks it's her fault. So maybe that means that Coach Ben got murdered and some people thought it was Misty's fault later.
Maybe.
And that's why she's saying.
I'm really curious to see how that worked. I was just thinking about that today as I was rewatching. I thought it's really a bummer that we're not going to have new episodes for a long time, because I really want to see what happens next.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Where is it? I'm going to talk about period syncing. So I remembered reading that it was a myth that periods actually sync up among women who live together. So I looked it up, and every article I could find said there's little to no evidence of it, even though anecdotally many women say they have personal experience of it. There was an article on sciencefocus.com that said the idea has been around since a researcher called Martha McClintock studied the cycles of 135 American students in 1971 and claimed that the onset of menstruation was more similar among roommates than random pairings of women. A popular evolutionary explanation emerged that this phenomenon helps females avoid being monopolized by dominant male because the women are fertile simultaneously. At a time when feminism was gaining traction, the idea that females would cooperate in the face of male domination was persuasive. But more than 30 years of investigation have past since McClintock's research, and multiple studies since have failed to provide evidence for this phenomenon. Others have also pointed out methodological oversights in the original study. Another article from Healthline said a 2006 study of 186 college students demonstrated that women living in groups did not synchronize their cycles, according to the study's authors. Moreover, these researchers noted that any group synchrony that occurred was at the level of chance and variability of period cycles over time inevitably resulted in convergences and subsequent divergences of cycle onsets. Then an article from PubMed.gov says it's widely believed that women who live together or who are close friends synchronize their menstrual cycles. We re-examined this phenomenon in two ways. First, we collected data on menstrual cycles from 186 Chinese women living in dorms for over a year. We found that women living in groups did not synchronize their cycles. Second, we reviewed the first study reporting menstrual synchrony. We found that group synchrony in that study was at the level of chance. And then the last thing is the page on Wikipedia on menstrual synchrony. It goes over a lot of history of the thinking on the concept, cites a bunch of studies. And then in a segment called Status of the Hypothesis, it says, in a 2013 systematic review of menstrual synchrony, Harris and Witzhum concluded, in light of the lack of empirical evidence for menstrual synchrony, it seems there should be more widespread doubt than acceptance of this hypothesis. The experience of synchrony may be the result of the mathematical fact that menstrual cycles of different frequencies repeatedly converge and diverge over time and not due to a process of synchronization, and the probability of encountering such overlaps by chance is high. So that's what's on the internet, you know, from this. And I looked at like the first 10 links and they all said the same thing. So all that makes me like the episode a little less than I would have. I think there's a few possibilities why the writers would include it. One, they believe it's real. Two, they don't believe it's real, but thought it was too good of a plot element not to include. And I think it is a great plot element. Three, there's just something supernatural happening in the show that makes it real, even though it's not real in the real world. Or four, it is all just coincidence, although that seems a little crazy given that there's however many 12 of them and they're all on it at the same time. So anyway, and I think why it works so well were a few reasons there. It shows that they're all on the same page right now. Like they're doing that synchronized dance to hip hop when the episode opens, which I love that kind of thing. And it just shows that right now, at least they're all pretty much on the same team, but they're starting to diverge a little bit. So it's just that theme of synchronization. And then also the whole plot line with Shauna, where she's nervous about her pregnancy being exposed, yep, so she has to go fake it.
I think it doesn't really matter if it's real. If you went out and asked 10 people and 8 of them would say they believed it, that's all the show really needs.
It bothers
me. Work.
It works in a story, but yeah.
It's such a poetic and fantastic image.
Yeah.
I think it's worth it for the episode.
And I've seen it in other shows. I remember there was an episode of Sex and the City that kind of centered around that synchronization. I don't believe it. It doesn't make sense to me either, but I think, I don't know, maybe it's a psychological thing that women use as a bonding.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But I think most women believe it's actually, if you live with a group of women, your periods will sync up.
I think, and I mean, they will eventually, you know, because there's such variances. And so I think it's just something that you share.
But I mean, they think that it will sync up and stay synced.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Never.
I was curious what you guys were going to say about that.
Yeah. It has never happened to me that I'm aware of. And I've certainly spent plenty of time living with other women.
I don't think it, I certainly didn't think it happened to me in any real sense, but I know it is something that young girls talked about when I was a young girl.
When I was younger, I thought it did happen because I kept hearing people talk about it.
Right.
And only in recent years when I started looking up everything all the time, did I see, oh wait, scientists say that it's not real.
It's like Pop Rocks and Coke.
Yeah.
It's an urban legend. Mm-hmm.
That just came up in Walking Dead cast this week with Alfonso Ribeiro. You know, the Michael Jackson guy, kid who was dancing with Michael Jackson. And then the rumor was that he drank Pepsi and ate a bag of Pop Rocks and died. And then he showed up on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, I always thought it was Mikey from the Life cereal that died from Pop Rocks.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting
I think it's an East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah.
I'm getting my vision, 80s maybe. Things all jumbled up, maybe.
But I can remember girls, oh, I'm on my period now. Oh, my God, so am I.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I don't know, it was just a thing.
Sisters.
Yeah.
I mean, it is something to bond over, but I don't remember it ever becoming like, we're always on at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like
exactly.
Just like every once in a while, you'd be like, hey, me too.
Mm-hmm. All right, Penny?
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Misty Natalie buddy cop show.
Love it.
The scene in that restaurant when first of all, Misty so gladly takes part in this like sting operation and dumps a travel mug of gasoline on this dude's lap, like without even a hesitation. She's like, oh, that's my cue, dump. And then, you know, Natalie is such a badass with the guy and scares the living daylights out of him. And then my favorite moment, as they're leaving, Natalie's like, you should ask that guy out. You two have so much in common.
So funny.
I was like, oh, Natalie's having some fun. Yay.
I think that moment capitalized on, they make a great team on both their strength. I bet you it was Misty who came up with the idea and loved poured it on his lap and then. Mm-hmm. Natalie's the one who gets to put the lighter on and threaten to kill him, you know?
Yeah, because she looks scary.
Yeah.
Whereas we all know Misty's the actual scary person. Right. Mm-hmm.
But she's the one who'll just be aggressive about things, Natalie.
Yeah. And I didn't notice this in an earlier watch, but when Misty comes to Nat's hotel room, she has like a special knock. And Natalie's like, we don't need a code.
What was it like? Do you remember?
It wasn't very complicated. It was like knock, knock, knock or something like that.
Yeah.
And then she gives her the owl, which even on first watch, I was like, that's suspicious. Like, what's the owl all about?
I don't think I was suspicious. I just thought it was desperation.
Oh,
on well, first
I thought it was
watch,
ugly.
Yeah.
What owl?
I mean, who brings somebody a present to a motel room? I don't know. It was so weird.
What was it? Like
yeah.
a stuffed owl?
It's a nanny cam. It's a ceramic owl.
It's a diffuser.
I missed that.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And a room, an aroma diffuser.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's supposed to. She's like goes on and on. It's like mm-hmm. yelling, yelling or whatever. But if I were Natalie, I would have thrown that thing away immediately. I would have been like, weird. No. But you know, plot.
Yeah.
It leads to great things later.
Yeah. Like Natalie calling Misty a conniving poodle haired little fucking freak while Misty frowns watching.
That was so fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that scene because Thaisa's immediate response to seeing the fucked up image of where Travis was killed is, I'm calling Shauna. And it makes me think once again that Shauna maybe is kind of the boss of the group. Like, there's been a bunch of times that Shauna has just sort of like asserted dominance over the other women in a way that makes me think that, I don't know, maybe she's the antler queen. It's possible.
Maybe, yeah. To me, it feels like Shauna and Thaisa are bonded together in like more partner-y kind of way, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I do think that their budding friendship is really beautiful and that this episode gave us, this episode was slower than a lot of other episodes. It was more about character moments and we got, you know, Ty and Van kissing, Nat and Travis kissing. We got like Shauna having a real moment with her daughter, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Ty and Simone kissing.
Yeah. Ty and Simone kissing. And I feel like there was another like beat like that. That was just, I don't know. It was more of a, oh, we did get the dance. You mentioned that earlier. Like it was just this episode, you know, it's episode 5. It's right in the middle. It's like a time to sort of like take stock of where we are before things get really crazy in the second half.
I love it. It's got everything that I love about Yellow Jackets. Funny, fucked up, mysterious, good dialogue, great character. You know, even though maybe the plot didn't advance as much or it wasn't as fast of an episode, I just can't get enough of watching all this stuff.
Yeah. Every episode is great in its own way.
Yeah.
All right. I will talk about Shauna and Jackie because we haven't talked about them yet. I thought they had some really sweet moments here together. Shauna can see that the other girls are starting to be really resentful that Jackie's not pulling her weight.
Yeah.
And she's trying to help Jackie. She warns her that she's alienating herself with the group by not pitching in. And Jackie kind of lets her defenses down with Shauna. And she's confessing that she's struggling being out there in the wilderness and that she's not doing well and she's homesick and she's scared. Shauna gives her a real sweet pep talk and tries to cheer her up, tries to motivate her to be more a part of the group. And she returns the gold heart necklace to Jackie to cheer her up. It's really sweet and tender, but I also found it really ironic as Shauna has just figured out that she's pregnant with Jeff's baby. So, you know, just more of the complicated relationship between the two. Mm-hmm. But I did think it was a really sweet moment and probably the last one that we get between the two of them.
I mean, this show is great at taking sweet moments and turning them dark. And one way is, oh, they're having a nice moment. Look, oh, wait, she gave her the necklace that the dead girl has. Mm-hmm. And we know now that Jackie's not that girl because we've seen the end, but at this point we didn't. So it's like, oh, shit. But also, she's saying all this stuff about how what's great about Jackie is, you know, you make us all feel better and, you know, showing her how to pop the animal bone out of the socket or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And, but then I noticed that, you know, when she's, giving her a hug, she's saying, you're basically the best, remember? And then as soon as her face is over Jackie's shoulder, it changes to where it's like kind of serious or something. And it made me think all of that may have been insincere. And maybe Shauna's just worried that Jackie's going to find out that she's pregnant with Jeff's baby. And she's trying to, you know, hide that and be friendly. I don't know. It really made me wonder if none of it was sincere at all. I mean, I'd like to think that it at least came from a somewhat sincere place.
Sincere. Why would she bother?
But when the look on her face changed, I guess she was just like, "Oh my God, I'm pregnant with her boyfriend's
that's what
baby.
I thought it was. Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Is that, you know, she's got a ticking time bomb going, and so it's gonna, you know, somebody's gonna find out.
But I still don't know how sincere that was. I mean, I don't know how true it was. Maybe she actually was just feeling bad about Jackie feeling upset and was trying to cheer her up. But I do wonder how much she was just kind of blowing smoke up her ass, you know, because we know she has a lot of resentments about Jackie and they don't really come out until the last episode.
I thought it was sincere. I thought she was really trying to, help Jackie be less depressed. I mean, I think Jackie's really depressed at this point. And also, I think she believes that they need Jackie. Like, Jackie is a leader for this group and has been for a long time. And I think Shauna really believes that, like, their chances of survival are better with Jackie taking an interest in their survival instead of just checking out.
I mean, we don't know for sure. Could be absolutely right, but I wouldn't be surprised if she's not really that focused on that. She's more just worried about the situation with her, with the baby.
Yeah. I think it's sort of all of that mixed together, right?
And I think Shauna wasn't into the seance at all, but Jackie, that was like Jackie's opportunity to add something to the group, to use her leadership skills that she had. And she was like, right, Shauna, right? And Shauna went along with it, I think, for her.
Yeah. She said, we don't have anything better to do.
Yeah.
And another interesting thing in there is Jackie saying to Shauna, you're becoming a real badass. And that's what's happening here is Shauna's stock is rising and Jackie's is going down. But she also got in one of her like passive aggressive digs in there too. Oh, I'm just kidding. I forgot exactly what she said, but
who? Which one?
Jackie, like she said, you know, things that you're good at, and it was like, oh yeah, like
cutting up dead things
and some other insult. I'm just kidding. Uh-huh.
And at the very end, Shauna tried to get Jackie to go upstairs to sleep, to comfort and sleep with Thaisa. And Jackie wouldn't go. But I think, you know, Shauna was trying to prod her to help other people to participate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause they're all like, I noticed much more on this watch. They're cooking and hanging clothes to dry, chopping wood. And Jackie's fixing her hair and tying her shirt in a cute thing and fiddling with her Walkman. And everybody's giving her dirty looks. And it's like, dude, I kind of wonder, like, I guess, you know, she's grown up rich and hasn't had to do much for herself, but so has Lottie. And I don't know if we've seen Lottie doing a lot of work, but she's not getting, maybe because she's off the lake or it's just not part
of
her
story. Acting
crazy. Yeah.
I honestly think it's to defend Jackie. I think it's less about entitlement. And although I can see that's what they see, but I honestly think it's more that Jackie's lost her will to live in many ways. And so she just doesn't see the point in any of that. She's I think more than most of the other girls, she's struggling being out there and she's losing her will to eat and live and survive. And if she had been by herself, I think she probably would have succumbed much quicker.
I don't think she's that depressed. I think she's just out of her element. And I think the reason why she's not eating is because she has an eating disorder. But I could be wrong.
I mean, maybe. There's all the other girls are hungry and trying to feed themselves.
You'd think at this point you'd eat. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Like, you're starving. So,
yeah, there's something there.
Yeah.
All right. Jason?
I had some stuff on. Oh, so we already talked a bit about Thaisa. I think Biscuit was barking at Thaisa, actually.
That's what it looked like.
Right?
I couldn't tell for sure with the camera.
Look out the window. Well, they wanted it to seem like it could have been out the window, but I think Biscuit is like Sammy. Like, every once in a while, you turn into somebody else that I don't like. And this whole Spill thing, and, you know, Spill, it wants, it's hungry, it wants blood. And then we see the freaking dog on this shrine, well, the head of the dog right at the end. And that's right, superimposed with Thaisa winning this election. So the implication is this dog was sacrificed. So I think that all ties in. So maybe Thaisa doesn't believe in all this stuff, but maybe her alternate sleepwalker personality does or something. But with Sammy, like, I really think, and you can't take anything for granted on the show, but I think with him, he's just this poor little kid whose mom has two personalities and he doesn't know what the hell to do about it. And when he tries to tell her, she blames him. And so he acts out by, like, pushing the crayons off the table or whatever. At times in the series, he's looked kind of like intensely creepy, like there's something dark going on. Although I didn't think he did anything like that in this particular episode. But I really think that that's just him not knowing what to do and just acting out or whatever, dealing with it as best as he can. And I also think about how you can't really always go, like, Daphne's always saying, well, that look he got on his face, I think it means something. But I think on these shows, well, one thing on this show, they like to misdirect you. But also, I think about Lost, where the actors didn't really know the whole story for their characters. And so they had to just play it the best they could with the information they had. And, like, Terry O'Quinn playing Locke seemed really kind of ominous sometimes, but he turned out just to be some kind of loser. Basically, he's my favorite character, but still, like, there were a lot of, like, if you tried to read based on how they acted it, it would lead you down the wrong path. So I think we can't always rely on that. This is why Melanie Lynskey has said in interviews that she's insisted on knowing more about her character's story than the writers wanted to tell her, just so she'll know how to play it, so it all makes sense, you know? And little Sammy, the way that actor plays it, sometimes it seems like he's got some dark secret going on, but he's just a kid, and I don't take it for granted that that's the case. I just think he's, the only thing that gives me pause is those drawings on his wall.
Yeah, I was, like, about to say, the drawings are creepy.
Yeah. So,
but that could be something real that he saw, you know, or not necessarily something supernatural that he saw
or heard about, or.
Yeah, it's hard to know. That's too vague to really base anything on. I also think they probably give him direction, right?
Yeah.
Look intense. And so he's like, you know, he's a 5-year-old.
They may, and also they may, I mean, I think they wanted us to think that there was something with, even up to this point, we still don't know at this point that Thaisa is presumably the lady in the tree, aka, or quote unquote, or the bad one. By the way, oh yeah, so the wolf is, I think, you know, I was thinking maybe she's the wolf. Wait, why did I think, what am I saying here? Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find it in my notes. Because now that I'm saying this, it doesn't make any sense. Okay, so Biscuit's barking at Thaisa. Maybe she's threatened this dog before. And maybe she's, I mean, the bad one evokes the big bad wolf to me. I don't know. It doesn't really make sense. Never mind.
There's definitely something about Thaisa and wolves, but we just don't know what. I mean, she kills a wolf later, but yeah, we don't really know the whole story yet.
Well, a wolf
chewed up her girlfriend's face.
Yeah.
But I feel like maybe she's taken on that wolf persona now as her other half, the dark half. Maybe.
Yeah. Something about wolves.
All right, Penny.
All right. So now that we know what we know about Jeff, him wanting to go to book club is so freaking adorable.
It is.
He's like, it could be a date. I'm like, oh, Shauna, he loves you. I mean, he's so sweet. And he's like, you sure were right. Callie is getting quite an attitude. Like, he's he's like he wants to be her partner. It's he's very lovable to me now.
Me too. It's so
great. Rewatch puts Jeff in such a different light.
I know. It's so yeah. great. And they picked the perfect actor for it because he's mm-hmm. very believable as a total douchebag or just this lovable kind of clueless mm-hmm. guy.
Yeah. The other thing I had was that when Misty was approaching Ben under the blankets, there was this amazing, like almost religious sounding music playing up until when he wakes up and like shoos her away. It's like, oh, and I just, I don't know. Once again, the show does amazing things with music. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
My next note or point was Shauna Googles herself, grown up Shauna. And that, and she does that because Callie says, does he have the internet, meaning Adam? And I thought about that. I think why Shauna's having so much fun and why it's so exciting with Adam is because she feels like her relationship with him has been anonymous. She feels like she's not Shauna Shipman of the Yellow Jackets crash any longer. But she's starting to realize that it isn't very likely that he doesn't know who she is. Mm. I freeze framed on the Google articles that she was pulling up. And it talks mostly just random facts that we already know about the crash and everything. But it does say that the families of Laura Lee and Lottie Matthews sued the manufacturer of the plane that crashed. Mm. So I just thought that was just a little interesting tidbit. Mm. And I think that's where Shauna starts to become suspicious that there's no way he doesn't know who she is. And he hasn't said anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I mean, if you were in his place and you met someone that you found really interesting, you would Google them, right? I do.
Just to see
what's out there.
In this day and age. And then, yeah, definitely.
You know, you find all that and then you think to yourself, but she clearly didn't want to tell me, so I'll just keep it to myself until she's ready. Like, that's what I would do if I were Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I wouldn't want to be that person that's like probing you for details on, you know, what happened.
Yeah.
That's what, when I dated Catherine Zeta Jones, I didn't even know it was her. And then I looked it up later. Kidding.
And you kept it quiet.
Yeah.
Oh, she's going to come up in the news section.
Oh, good.
That's it for me.
Okay.
I have a couple other notes.
I have one more small point.
Okay.
And then we can do notes. I liked Travis in this episode because he loosened up and he was teasing in a way that wasn't just contemptuous, you know, and he had fun and flirting and laughing and, you know, also just seeing Natalie, how bonded, I mean, everything she's doing is because of her connection to him. Thinking back on, I mean, I didn't realize it, but they had a relationship, you know, after this, they helped each other stay clean and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I just like, people always talk about, oh, you don't understand, he's got this bad boy appeal, but to me, he crosses over to the line of just being contemptuous and abusive, and I don't get that.
I was thinking a lot about what the appeal is of the bad boy, and I think for somebody like Nat, she recognizes that it's mostly bluster and that he is a person in pain that's similar to her own, and that's what draws her to him. Is that she can see that there's more to him underneath that.
I mean, he's saying things like last episode when she was trying to shoot the gun and the coin fell off. Why don't you try something you're better at, like folding clothes or sucking cock, you think he's going to say. Like, he's just saying stuff like that all the time. And you guys are disgusting. And just like, God, what a, like, it, to me, like, the bad boy
that
appeal
was a
is
a disgusting comment that she said, though.
Yeah,
he's saying, oh, he's just being, you know, really contemptuous and I would say borderline abusive to his brother and to, and yeah, I mean, we all have reasons why we do the things that aren't so great that we do, including Jackie, you know. I mean, people might think she's hot and you'd be like, well, she's an abuser, but I wonder if part of the reason she likes him is because she was abused by her own father.
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, they both have these toxic backgrounds, and yeah, she can be a little toxic too, right? Yeah. Like, she's got some hostility to her, and I think they're kindred spirits.
But I mean, up until this point, I don't remember there being any time where he was at all even a little self-effacing, or he was humorless, you know. And in this episode, I think because she's showing interest in him and he's finally sort of letting himself be a little vulnerable, they're actually laughing together. And I think mm-hmm. even laughed at himself once. And that just made me like him so much more.
They had their big breakthrough, I think, was when she helped him dig up his father's body to get the ring for Javi.
Yeah. And she did the dirty work.
Yeah. And then he really opened up to her after that. I think that's mm-hmm. where we first saw like this side of Travis that she sees.
Mm-hmm. Like she has sensed that was there before yeah. I did.
I liked him best in this episode. That was a note I had. The flirty banter mm-hmm. between the two of them is really cute. And he participated in the seance. He didn't get up and dance, but he was sitting there laughing, you know, kind of going along with the music That's and cool. having a good time. And I thought it was easy to see why Natalie was attracted to him. Mm-hmm. I also think he's the only guy there that's within like a dateable age with a whole bunch of 17-year-old girls.
Yeah. I get the whole, I get the bad boy thing. Like if guys who are kind of aloof or even dismissive, because it's like, I think women like knowing that, oh, he's not just blowing smoke up my ass to try to get me to do something. He's being his real self. He has a spine, you know. I don't know, you guys would know better, but I mean, like that with me, with women, like if they have their own opinions and they're not just trying to say what they think I'll like, then I respect them more. And I think there's something to that. But for me, it can definitely cross over to the point where they're just abusive. And I think some women or people, I mean, it goes both all genders, but where if someone treats you like shit and you deep down feel like you deserve it, then you'll go for people like that. And that's what bothers me, you know?
Yeah. Well, for my bad boy phase was almost entirely about rebelling against my parents. So it was, you know, calculated. I picked them for a reason, that they would like maximally piss off my parents.
I mean, my mother, this is where this like this real deep feeling stems from for me. My mom picked the worst guys, and Travis, the worst thing I can think of right now that he's done is when he pointed that gun at Natalie. Mm-hmm. Like she called him a name and he pointed a loaded gun that he had just been finished firing at her. And one of the guys that my mom was with for a while was just really abusive, like physically abusive. And he pointed a gun at us. And so when I saw that, I was like, fuck you, dude.
I mean, I'm really sorry that happened to you, Jason. That's awful.
I've talked about it on podcasts before.
When I think of a bad boy, the attraction of a bad boy, I think of somebody who, you know, is kind of going against the norms of society.
Yeah.
I don't think of somebody who's going to treat me like crap. Like that, to me, that's not attractive.
But he does. He treats them all like shit, I think.
Right. Right. He wasn't attractive to me at all until this episode.
Mm. Me neither.
And then I felt like the flirty banter that him and Natalie had was really cute, and you could see why she was really liking him, but up until then, it was like he was a different person.
I mean, the only thing that I think he's clearly severely wounded. And yeah, maybe if you saw that and realized he just needs someone to be nice to him and he'll open up. I mean, I think that's can be a trap for, well, I was going to say women, but for everyone, like I can fix this guy, you know, but, but still, yeah. I think that is kind of what was going on with her. Like she sees something underneath, like Penny's saying.
Yeah, you mostly can't fix people, but he's 17. He still has time to fix.
I had a note about the dance party in the very beginning. I thought it was really cute. I noticed who didn't get up and dance, which was Coach Ben for obvious reasons. And Misty kind of stood off in the sides and was kind of dancing, but not doing the same thing the girls were doing. And Travis was stayed seated in his seat, but you could see they were all laughing and having fun. I thought Javi was freaking adorable, and everybody like gave him the center of attention when he got up and danced. And that really made me happy, because poor Javi, I think he's just been just left behind and ignored.
He's the youngest.
Yeah. And he looked so happy to be dancing and be the limelight. It was really cute.
It's cool. Well, I have a few notes. Should I go through all of them? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed clothes and outfits more than usual in this episode. Like, well, we didn't see it, but Shauna mentioned she dresses up like Daria on Halloween, which I could totally picture and thought was good for her. From MTV, that old cartoon. I loved Misty in her pumpkin scrubs and furry cat ears and long black tail sticking up in the back. Mm-hmm. Festive. That's a good costume. At the, like, this edgy, cool party that Adam takes Shauna to, there were tons of great outfits, but I particularly like this, I guess, contortionist wearing this suit of octagonal mirrors that the light was shining off of.
Oh, like totally. A human disco ball. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seemed like something you'd see at Burning Man. And then Nat just lying around in her hotel room in her Pink Floyd shirt with the sleeves cut off and her fishnet pantyhose or whatever. Mm-hmm. Leggings.
Yeah, I love that outfit.
Ripped all up.
It takes talent to wear fishnets that have been ripped, like, because they'll just keep ripping. So how she managed to keep them on is like amazing to me.
Maybe it's like some super strong material or something. I don't know. Funny moments. Jeff wanting to go to book club. Sean is like, yeah, you haven't done the reading. What's it about? Lay it on me. We're reading The Girl in the Train Window.
The train. Yeah, she and, got that all wrong.
You know, really, I'm just going to avoid side eye from the other moms. It's basically the opposite of a sausage fest. And then he goes, a clam bake. And she's like, don't, you don't need to figure that out. It's so funny.
Jeff.
I think it's funny when Shauna says, like, no, I don't like my daughter, or our daughter's an asshole. Before I was a parent, I would have been very judgmental of that. Now that I am, I'm like, okay. I mean, I love my kids, but.
Oh, wait, you haven't even gotten to the
I know. We're getting there with one of them.
I remember I had a friend who her kids were much older than mine, and she was like, I hate her. She is, and would say all these terrible things. And I just thought, she's the worst mother in the whole world. And then I figured it all out when my kids hit their teenage years.
Funny. I think Nico's starting early. And then let's see. Nat calls Misty. And didn't you say you knew a guy? First thing she says, not even hello. Didn't you say you knew a guy who could break into people's email? Who is this, please? Then she goes, what's your problem? It's a simple question. I think my favorite that I don't even remember noticing when I first saw this is there's kids trick-or-treating at the nursery or whatever, and Misty fakes like old Mrs. Peterson flatlined.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Code blue. Trick it is. Let's see. I thought Thaisa and Simone are a pretty hot couple. And was this when we first learned that Van and Thaisa are a couple for sure? Or did we already know that? It's the first we really learned. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty obvious, but it was just looks and stuff before. Yeah, this was the big confirmation.
When Thaisa and Shauna sleep upstairs together and Shauna confides about her pregnancy, that made me think maybe later when they, as adults, sleep over together and confiding each other, that it was kind of a nostalgic thing because of what happened now. And we see Laura Lee reading that flight manual, which is tragic now that we know where it leads. And then last is they get the text about the blackmail. I didn't realize that came so late. We're already halfway through. And I thought it was very skilled that they have it in an episode that doesn't really have much about Jeff, but it's just showing him as this like hapless father and clueless husband. So no one would ever think it was him at this point.
I was really impressed that he was able to make the symbol.
I know. With the ASCII characters or whatever it is.
Yeah. That must have taken forever to figure that out.
Yeah. How the hell do you do that? I think there may be like
copy and paste.
There's like a way online where you can like submit an image and it will give you the ASCII version of it, I think.
Oh, that's
I'm
cool.
not sure, but maybe.
Maybe that's what Randy did. Maybe that was his part of the blackmail
scheme.
Yeah, he's
a genius. That.
Seems doubtful.
That's all I got.
All right. Any other points, Penny?
Just that Kevin deserves better.
Poor guy.
I mean,
we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
He's like so into her, and then he calls her and she's like, "Oh, I got another call," and hangs up on him and immediately calls Misty to hack into his email.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just using him completely, and it takes them a long time to figure it out.
Yeah.
I know. And I talked about that last week. Like, my empathy for Nat is so great that I'm forgiving her for that, you know, because she's so lost. And Kevin's going to be okay. He's a great guy.
Yeah. He has a cute kid. He's fine.
Yeah.
Did they end up sleeping together?
Yeah.
Yes.
She steals his gun.
After this. Yeah. She steals his gun.
I thought. Yeah, I wonder
it's
if
the night of the black, the night they drop the money off.
Yeah, but I think I was at that point thinking, it seems like she is having some feelings for him, but it's like a lot of stuff on the show. It's a lot of things mixed together.
I think she does have feelings for him, but ultimately her priority is finding out what happened to Travis.
Right, and using him to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think using Kevin makes her sad, but she does it anyway.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, we'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Hey, I want to spread the news that if it feels it's a good getting used, or you just keep on using me until you use me up.
All right, we are back, and we're going to hear some news from Penny.
So there wasn't a ton of news this week, but the one thing was that they finally released the news that Christina Ricci has been in Romania filming the new Wednesday Addams TV series. She's not playing an adult Wednesday. She's playing a role that has not yet been disclosed. But I thought it was
Thursday.
Really cool. Yeah, Thursday. That Catherine Zeta-Jones is playing Morticia. And Luis
Jason's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. And Luis Guzman is playing what's the dad's name?
Gomez.
And an actress that I'm not familiar with, Jenna Ortega, will be playing Wednesday. I saw some pictures of her online and I was like, yeah, she totally looks like a Wednesday Addams. So I'm excited for that series. I think it sounds like it's going to be fun. It takes place at like a magical boarding school. So I think it's kind of like Sabrina, the remake Sabrina that was dark, or maybe a little Harry Potter.
Do we know what network or service it'll be on?
I'm pretty sure it's Netflix, but I'm not 100%.
I'm curious for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I found this great interview with Kevin Alves, who plays Travis. And it was on a Canadian website called Complex Canada by, and the interviewer is Mariska Fernandez. And I didn't copy out the whole thing. It was a really long interview. So I'm just going to take some highlights. And it's a Q&A format. I love that it's got all these different genres together. It's not something that's predictable. And this is Travis or Kevin. Yeah, I think that's the beauty of this show. Being a week-to-week release was the ability for it to continue to bend genres, because every week you end an episode and people would talk about it in one way. Then by the time you got to next week, we flip it upside down. It'd be different, and then you feel like it's a whole different show for a second because this mystery is unfolding right in front of your eyes. I think if this show had been all at once, it would have done amazing, but we would have lost that beauty of the week-to-week of everyone kind of telling their best friend, I don't know what's happening, but this is happening. I was talking to a stylist who I'm working with next week on a magazine shoot, and they said at best that the idea of the show made us appreciate how much we loved week-to-week releases. And I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
What's the wildest fan theory you ever read? They're all so good and all justified. That's the cool thing about the Reddit theories, is that they find a way to justify people talking about it. They figure out how it's plausible. There was a theory that I read claiming that I was going to be the antler queen with the antlers. I found that wild when I first saw it, only because I had never thought of it before. I was like, oh, wow, there's plausibility there. So it was cool to see that and just to see the detail. There are just too many theories. I was really on the bandwagon of Adam is Javi theory for a long time because I thought that was spectacular. I thought that was really well done artistically, like all the shots that you'd see between Adam and Javi and Shauna in the past and the future. It was so well done. So yeah, I was definitely on board for that.
What's the wildest theory you've heard? Mine is that Callie is Pit Girl. I think that's the wildest
I've heard. Yeah, that they go back to the woods and that one's nuts. Travis has his own levels of darkness and the shades of what it is to be both a victim and a villain. How was it to research your character and find that balance? What's your perception of who Travis is? Yeah, with Travis, it was really important to first be authentic to the time period. This was 1996. How would a 1996 17-year-old react in a situation? Not a 2021 teenager. That was really important to start with and make sure that I justify that, not in how I would do it now, but how someone would do it at that point based on pop culture at that time and based on social norms at that time. So that was really important, which made the villain side of him a little easier because it was his not knowing or his ignorance that leads to a lot of his decisions at that time, which kind of make him the villain. But aside from that, it's coming from a place of not wanting to be. It's coming from a place of trying to fit in and figure out his place in this society of people now, and being very uncomfortable and grieving. He's grieving his dad, who he watched fall off that tree. And so I think that's really tough. But in terms of navigating, making sure that he was human, I definitely had to spend 5 months championing his decisions, made sure that every decision he made was justified. And so I spent 5 months really liking this guy because that was my job, to make sure that I cared about the person. And so I pulled from my own life. Like, what kind of masks would I wear at different times in my life, and figure out what masks he was wearing, and definitely making sure that we showed a different side of him when it was just him and Natalie, when they're at their best, and then bring out his mask side when he's hurt. So there was a lot of that happening. And yeah, then watching the show, no question, I was like every other viewer wanting to hit him over the head 18 times. But when we were shooting, I think it was really important to try my best to justify and not judge him.
I love that because a lot of actors will, he's right, it's their job to sympathize. You can't really play a role if you're not inhabiting it and justifying everything and feeling like you're doing what you should be or whatever.
Yeah.
But they always, a lot of actors will continue that in their interviews. And so I like occasionally when an actor will say, once I stepped out, I could see, yes, he was whatever, you know.
Yeah, he's being a jerk. Yeah, yeah, totally. They asked him if he thought he could survive in the wilderness. And he said, no, absolutely not. There's not a single cast member, I think, that would survive the wilderness. We all literally go to Crafty every 2 hours, get a blanket when it's, you know, below 10 degrees. There's no way any of us are surviving that. And then from this cast, who do you think has the strongest survival instinct? I'm going to say Luciano LaRue. That's Javi. I think Luigi is just going to make it happen. Whatever he needs to do to survive, he'll do.
Aw.
Cool.
Yeah. That's great.
I was surprised. I guess Coach is not. I guess Javi's better than Coach.
All right. We have our listener feedback. And wow, we got some really in-depth feedback. So thank you, everybody, for submitting everything. That is wonderful. I'll go ahead and read the first one. It's from Angela Solfero Mensoni. It's a persuasive myth. I believe she's talking about women's periods syncing up. Mm-hmm. It's a persuasive myth. I understand why the writers chose to go with this storyline, because everyone believes it, and women will swear that it is true, but it's largely coincidence. And she included a link to an article entitled, Does Your Period Really Sync with Close Friends? So,
another, yeah.
I'm sure you could look that up if you wanted to see it. All right. Jason, you want to read from
I'll read from Jason, the plumber from San Diego. This is the guy who has sent in a couple of theories that, you know, we've liked. So now we got to connect that with his name. Jason, the plumber from San Diego, says, just finished the rewatch of Bloodhive, and I don't believe this episode did anything to strengthen or weaken any of my theories. But on this, my third rewatch, was left with a few thoughts that I didn't have the previous times I viewed it. One, I feel so bad for Sammy. With the knowledge that Ty is the, quote, bad one, we as viewers gave this kid a bad rap. Two, how did Jackie's soccer uniform make it back from the wild? Assuming the girls gathered up Jackie's stuff to use as extra clothes for the duration of their stay, how did it make it back to the tailors in such good shape that it could have been a gift to Shauna 20 years later and then to be swiped by Kelly 5 years after that? I mean, she may have had more than one.
That's what I was thinking.
Also, yeah. They don't seem to be wearing their uniforms out in the wild at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Three, although Misty already had bad intentions for Coach Ben, I believe Shauna nailed the coffin shut during the seance when she replied with an affirmative for Misty's question about her crush liking her back. And four, on Thaisa's concession speech note cards, Phil Bathurst's name is written out as Spill Bathurst. Is it? I didn't see that.
I have to go back and look at that.
I know. Just emphasizing that Ty is the lady in the tree or the bad one. Really? I got to go back and look at that.
I know, because that really would make you think she had no intention of conceding.
Yeah. Right. Which it did. Whereas it seemed like she changed her mind in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. But if, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason.
Keep sending it in.
Yeah, keep it coming. I agree with all that, by the way.
Susie Smalling says, first off, huge thank you for the extra Yellow Jackets coverage. I love having an excuse to revisit this series already, and your coverage has been terrific. Thanks, Susie. I would definitely listen to you recover 6 through 9, knowing how the season ends, maybe mixing up with who covers the Eps from last time.
All right, you asked for it, so we'll do exactly that.
Anyway, as I am rewatching and listening to your coverage, I feel like I have given Shauna too much of a pass because I like the character and actresses so much. If out of context, you told me a character had sex with their best friend's boyfriend, cheated on her husband, got caught cheating by her daughter, and then basically threatened her into not telling, killed an innocent bunny, and then fed it to her unsuspecting family, accidentally killed her innocent lover, and was most concerned with her friends calling it a murder and not with having killed him, stole $50,000 from a friend who helped her survive a plane crash, and then ropes that friend and another into helping her cover up the murder with a big fat lie. Yeah, I think that was the bad guy of the thing. Also, my sincere apologies to whoever ends up having to read that sentence. I am a professor. I should so know good. Better.
Thank By the you. Way, I did not write this.
Right. Jason, my husband hates Travis and was delighted when I played him part of a podcast where you expressed your Travis feelings. My theory is genuinely nice dudes just cannot handle that bad boy asshat routine is actually somehow appealing.
Can't handle it.
And finally, Misty is definitely in the cult. Misty definitely knew the symbol was on the floor of Travis's murder scene and could therefore figure out how to put together the pictures and draw the symbol. Misty fucking Quigley. Thanks again for the great coverage.
That was great.
I sort of thought that about Misty when she was putting the pictures together.
Yeah, she did that awfully fast. But I've seen that on other TV shows, and I'm like,
shorthand kind of thing.
But she also lives for that kind of stuff, you know?
Citizen detective.
I don't think she's in the cult, but
I don't think the cult would want her.
She could be the secretary and take notes. That sounded condescending, but you know, she's always like the assistant.
Yeah.
And the comments about Shauna, like everything in there is true, but yet not true. Like there's defenses for each of those things, but I really think it's a credit to the show that they have her do such dastardly evils, but yet we feel empathetic for her. And I think that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
She's evil, basically. She's just horrible. I'm just kidding.
I don't think she's evil. I mean, she's done a lot. She's reckless and not in touch with her own reality. But I don't think she's evil. But Melanie Linsky's so adorable that you.
Yes, I think that's what it is. If, you know, let's say Juliette Lewis and Melanie Linsky had played each other's parts, I think Juliette Lewis playing that, all that stuff, we wouldn't feel quite the same. I mean, all of these characters, I feel, I feel sympathetic or towards, even Misty, just being an odd bird who's trying to fit in and trying too hard. Like, I can totally sympathize with that. But I think Shauna in particular gets it way too easy. I agree with you, Susie.
All right. You have a call from Steve Brown.
Steve Brown.
Hello, House Podcastica. Jason, Penny, and Wendy, I think, this week. I hope I got that right. If I don't, I apologize. This is Steve, and this is going to be for Bloodhive. This opening sequence still freaks me out, but I don't skip it anymore. This little dance party they were having, the first time I went through this series, I thought this was weird that they had it, but then the second time through, I remember that locker room thing where they were dancing and doing the same thing. So, you know, it's common. Misty, you don't mess with the morning wood. Oh, the crazy that is Lottie. I thought it'd be warmer. I love this relationship between Sean and her daughter. Our daughter is an a-hole. A clam bake. Ah, the wolf hallucination, the spill on the door. Haisa is freaking out a little bit. Oh, and this is the second necklace trade, right? Shauna gives it back to Jackie. Oh, here is where he says he went to art school at Pratt. Okay, I got it. Shauna and Adam at this party. Travis just said the title of the episode, Bloodhive. Mic drop. Misty's citizen detective is African Gray. Freaking Natalie is cold as fuck. Light your dick on fire. Oh, my goodness. That's a Jinx Yomi a Coke moment. What are you doing here, both Shauna and her daughter saying at the same time? There are already marks in the attic for the candles. Smudges on the floor matching the lady with the hook single. No. I thought it was crazy back then. I still think it's crazy now. The candles just feel like such a weird thing. And now a payment. Okay. We know where this is going. Talk to you later.
That's great.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve.
All right. That's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. So much fun to cover these. If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out all of our other shows.
Like, we're going to start with Moon Knight next week, which it's on Disney Plus. It has Oscar Isaac as Moon Knight and Ethan Hawke. And it's this Marvel hero with a dissociative identity disorder. I think it's going to be darker than the other Disney Plus shows that we've seen so far. It'll be on House Podcastica feed and also its own separate podcast, much like we're doing with Yellow Jackets. If you just want to listen to Yellow Jackets, by the way, and not the other stuff, that has its own feed if you're not already on it. And, you know, even though we already covered episodes 6 through 10, we decided that Susie's right and we'll continue on with this rewatch covering episodes 6 through 10. And, we'll do exactly what she said and have different ones of us who didn't get to cover each episode do them until the very last one. Then maybe some of us will repeat that one. But anyway, next episode is Yellow Jacket season 1, episode 6, Saints.
All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening. Buzz, 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 buzz.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.